We'll begin right with the meditation this morning. Aware of your posture. Is it a posture that allows alertness and relaxation? As you are aware of the posture, if you notice tension or holding anywhere connected with the posture, you're welcome to allow there to be some subtle shifts of the body. Exploring, finding a posture that feels relaxed. A posture where the muscles can soften around the skeleton. It is possible to find a posture where the skeleton pretty much supports itself. There can be some damage at times to the skeleton that might prevent this, but much of the time there can be kind of a balance of the skeleton where the muscles can relax around it. So exploring that relaxation, aware and relaxing. Perhaps starting with the muscles in the body, places where you may tend to hold tension. And seeing if there's a way to soften, relax. The muscles of the body. Aware. Of relaxation, of exploring relaxation. And perhaps also exploring relaxation inside the body. Aware of the inside of the throat. Maybe that can relax. Maybe the heart can relax. maybe the stomach, the intestines can relax. Aware. Of allowing the relaxation perhaps our system can support a little more relaxation if you invite or request. May the body relax. Just dropping that in. The mind and body and see how they respond to the request. If it's supportive, you're welcome to use it. If it's not, then let it go. May the body relax. May the mind relax. Aware. Of relaxation. Whatever amount is available, whatever relaxation is available, aware. Curiosity about awareness. Aware. This is the experience of awareness. Taking it in as opposed to trying to figure it out. If you're in a humid climate, if you leave a room that's air conditioned and you walk out into humidity, you know the experience of humidity. You don't have to look for it or figure it out. It's like, oh, that's humidity. That's a kind of way to touch in. This is the experience of awareness. What is obvious? Awareness always is aware of something, some experience. Maybe specific, maybe a specific body sensation or sound. Maybe a particular emotion or thought, might be a feeling, pleasant, unpleasant. Might be narrow, a kind of a defined experience. Or it might be vague, diffuse, like humidity is diffuse. There are quite a few experiences that awareness connects with that are diffuse. What is obvious in this moment? Settling back, being willing to be shown. We can sometimes consider our stance in our practice to be that of a naturalist. A naturalist observing nature. Our minds and bodies are nature, and so it's a very apt analogy. A naturalist going into nature to observe and learn finds a place to observe and can often sit quietly so that the creatures and the environment become used to that naturalist being there and go about their experience, go about their things in their usual way. And the naturalist simply observes, curious. The naturalist doesn't get to pick what they learn about that day. Just observing what comes into view. Receiving. Practicing like a naturalist. Witnessing this being, the processes of body, of mind, and how they relate to each other. Awareness, observing quietly in the middle, being with what's here? Curious, interested in learning about this being, about this nature, letting nature show you. What's here? And from time to time, curious about the relationship the attitude in a relationship with what's happening, as well as the relationship or attitude perhaps shaped by the agenda we might have, by agendas we might have about what we're looking for. If a naturalist goes out and wants to learn something particular and is looking at that thing, looking for that, they might miss something else that's right in front of them. Available to be seen and understood. That naturalist might be frustrated if they're not seeing what they want to see. That would be an attitude in relationship to the agenda. Allowing relaxation of body and mind. Aware, curious, what's here? What's obvious? The analogy of the naturalist is a good description, in a way, a good exploration of the stance that we use in this particular practice. Non-interfering, witnessing what's already here, what's already unfolding. That's not to say it's the only way to observe and to learn about our experience. Just as in science, there are other ways to learn about nature. You know, you can go in to nature and take some things from nature back to the lab and study them in very specific conditions. Also in meditation, there's many different techniques, and they all provide and offer something different, a different way to explore experience. And one thing I'd say is that in terms of meditation, it is useful to understand the various kind of approaches, because at different times, and actually for different minds, for different people, the different approaches seem to be more resonant. So for instance, some people, maybe about a third, I'd say something in that number, about a third of people, this very open, receptive style of witnessing, non-interfering, is like hand in glove. It's just very easeful. It's an easy way in to the practice. Holding on to some particular experience feels so tense and tight. For others, for some number of people, that way of opening to this kind of broader set of experience feels chaotic. And the allowing themselves to just settle with one experience, that's where it feels more easeful. And then there's some in the middle that it's like, well, sometimes it's either equally easy or equally hard to use the approaches. And sometimes it can be at certain times one approach or another is more helpful. So they're all valid. They're all supportive. And what I often say to people, it's useful to find a practice that feels resonant, generally resonant, and pretty much stay with that one. But then you can use some of the other tools, some of the other practices, at times when there's something happening that it's hard to be present with. So when mindfulness overwhelms a particular form of practice, when the experience overwhelms the mindfulness in a particular form of practice, using another technique can be very helpful. So for myself, in practicing a concentration practice, there were times that the way that the mind was doing the concentration was getting very tight, very tense, and it was the whole way the concentration was being built was with that tension. And so I would alternate. I would open back. When I felt the concentration getting too tense, I would turn back to open awareness, remind myself of what it meant to be relaxed while being attentive, and then inviting the breath in, inviting the object of concentration in. There's a relaxed breath. That's how to be relaxed with the breath, and then kind of inclining towards that experience. Somebody asked a question about how this might be. This was how it worked for me. It may be very different for someone else. It may be that, and I know I had a friend who died some years ago, but the focused concentration was the most easy for her. You know, that was where her mind gravitated, that when she relaxed and just settled, it's like, right to the breath, the concentration was her doorway. The open awareness was more challenging, can be more challenging for people for whom that concentration is a doorway. It can feel chaotic. It's like the mind just feels so unstable. And that is a transition that happens if you shift from a concentration practice to an open awareness practice. So there's some period of time where you kind of have to just trust that, yeah, I am actually aware, and it feels chaotic. It feels like kind of bumpy or jumpy or bouncy or swirly, you know, just being aware of that. So in the shift, it can be that, that experience. But if that feels like you can hang out with that for 2 or 3 minutes, and then the mind gets overwhelmed by that, then going back to the concentration can be useful. So we can use these different forms, these different avenues of practice to support us. And this week, I'm really focusing on the naturalist style. I've used so many different forms of practice, and I found value in all of them. For me, at this point in my practice, this is the main one. And what I've also found for this form of practice is that it's helped me, it supplied me with a whole bunch of tools, essentially. Relax, receive, allow. Relax, receive, allow. Those three basically support pretty much any form of meditation practice you do. Even if you're doing a focused practice on the breath, if you're aiming towards the breath, we can aim and kind of attune to that area of experience and then receive the breath. So relaxing is kind of the support for any practice. The receiving, if you are aiming your attention at something, it's like the radio receiver is a good analogy for this. As you want to listen to a particular frequency, you tune to that frequency. You let the radio kind of tune to just pick that frequency up. But the radio doesn't go out and grab the frequency. It's a receiver. It's an attunement and receiving. And then exploring, allowing what is being received to be received as it is. So those tools have been very supportive for me in all forms of practice. There was a question kind of connected to this, related to something Sayadaw wrote. So I'll read the question. Is it there a disadvantage to using one-pointed meditation as opposed to receptive meditation? On page 42 of, and I checked, it's this Dhamma Everywhere book. In the first paragraph, that's what Sayadaw Utejaniya seems to be saying. It almost feels like just paying attention to the breath is the wrong way to meditate. Can you clarify? So what Sayadaw says on that page, and I'll read this. He's talking about tranquility meditation, which is essentially you start by paying attention to one thing, and then you stay with that thing to such an extent that the mind gets absorbed into it. So what he's talking about here is essentially absorption tranquility meditation in this paragraph. In tranquility meditation, the mind pays exclusive attention to one object becoming absorbed in it over time. So it's that absorption. Now, absorption happens, when we pay attention to one particular experience, so like the breath, for instance. We can be paying attention to, like I just talked about, attuning and then receiving. In that form of practice, just receiving what's here, receiving the changing nature of that experience, then that's not absorption meditation. That's kind of the attunement. It's attuning to one object, but it's not necessarily inclining towards actual absorption. If we're noticing change in the experience, that's in the terrain of insight meditation. We're noticing causes and conditions. We're noticing how things affect one thing after another. But as we pay attention to one thing, what the mind will do with that, and we can aim in this direction with paying attention to one thing, and sometimes it can happen as we pay attention to one thing, that the mind kind of gets so close to that experience. And it creates a kind of a counterpoint concept of the experience in the mind. And instead of attending then to the changing nature of the experience, and this tends to happen as the mind wants to move towards stillness, and it can. There can be times where this is where the mind gravitates, is towards deep, deep stillness. And so if the mind picks up on one object, and moves in the direction of stillness, it will create a concept out of that object and then absorb into the concept. It will stabilize the concept in the mind and absorb into the concept. And in that kind of meditation, so that's what's called jhana practice. In the Visuddhimagga, the jhana practice that's described, that's a commentarial teaching about the Buddhist teachings. In that commentary, the jhana practice is described in this absorption type of quality. The suttas, the way jhanas are described in the suttas, it's kind of out for various interpretations. Sometimes people think of the sutta descriptions of jhana practice as being descriptions of absorption, and sometimes more in the realm of still noticing changing experience. So if the mind absorbs into the concept, the mind stabilizes the concept and holds onto it, basically it creates an experience, an unchanging experience that the mind is absorbed into for a time. And in that place where the mind is absorbed into an unchanging experience, it's not the place that's conducive for wisdom to grow. And so this is what Sayadaw says. Becoming absorbed in it over time, having concentrated on it for a long time in the right way, the yogi achieves peaceful mental states. However, because of this very strong grasp on the object, and maybe using the word grasp here is, it's making it sound like greed, but we can absorb into the object skillfully, and it's holding the object. It's absorbed in it. As you go in, there's a kind of a way where the mind itself is holding that object. And so because of this very strong absorption into the object, other mental faculties don't get used, and the mind is no longer aware of other objects it could have otherwise known. There's no investigation of phenomena, nor is there a broader awareness of mind and body processes, thus blocking the opportunity for wisdom to arise. So he's speaking about that state, particularly of absorption into a concept. That's the place where wisdom can't arise. Now, in my own practice of concentration, I've had a little bit of experience of absorption. This mind doesn't tend to do that so much. It much more gravitates towards the broader and awareness of changing experience. There's so much curiosity in the mind. In this mind, it's like investigation and curiosity are so strong that as the mind would start to absorb in and notice it created a concept, it's like, oh, what's that? And it starts looking at that. So it kind of got in its own way in terms of the absorption. But my experience is that that kind of meditation is very valuable. Partly because it gives the mind a break. It gives the mind a break from dukkha. It allows the mind to rest at times. If it can absorb into that, it can allow the mind to rest very deeply. It's a very deep rest in the concentration practice. And the learning that happens as the mind is constructing the concentration, there's a lot of insight and wisdom and learning can happen in that process. And then as the concentration falls apart, which it will, because concepts are impermanent, unreliable experiences, they're not permanent. So they will break apart at some point. And that's the other place in concentration meditation, in that absorption meditation, where learning can occur. As the concentration falls apart, the mind understands a lot about the conditioning there, what's happening there. So as the mind of learning in terms of understanding and insight, that happens as the mind is noticing changing experience. So the going in and the coming out of that absorption practice offers a lot of opportunity for noticing changing experience. And it also creates the conditions for the mind to be very, very finely attuned to very detailed, precise experience. Now, that's not the only way that you can have insight. So again, there's just so many different ways in. The practice of the naturalist, for instance, you know, the just noticing moment after moment, this is what's happening, this is what's happening, this is what's happening. The continuity of mindfulness that develops there. So initially with the development of the mindfulness in this broader receptive awareness, you know, it's kind of like we're noticing a lot, a variety of things at a kind of a high level, more at the ordinary level. And certainly in our daily life practice, we're exploring that terrain, the terrain of our ordinary lives, our ordinary conditioning, our ordinary relationships. And so we stabilize the mindfulness on a variety of experiences. So it's a very broad kind of mindfulness. But as it gets more stable, as it gets more continuous, as the mindfulness gets more continuous and more able to be moment to moment, then what happens is that it, in that broad kind of way, the mind starts noticing more and more subtlety. And so there's a deeper kind of recognition of perhaps the motivation or a belief that's arising in the moment that's leading the mind to an intention to act that's either skillful or unskillful. And we can see this happening in a split second. Very deep insight can happen while you're in the kitchen cutting an apple. So we don't have to preference one or the other. I think what's most skillful is knowing what's skillful for your mind, what is a skillful practice for your mind, what allows the mindfulness to be stabilized, established, that translation of satipatthana that Bhikkhu Anālayo uses, the establishment of mindfulness, is the establishment of mindfulness moment after moment after moment after moment. And that's where the power comes from. In our formal meditation practice, we work at kind of encouraging that concentration, that moment to moment unfolding. And that is concentration. It's a form of concentration, the moment to moment stabilization of mindfulness. And in our formal practice, we actively keep remembering, keep inclining in that direction. In daily life, it's a slightly different thing because we do have other things. And as I've been talking about, notice in the moment mindfulness returns and not trying to hold on to it, especially if you're in a particularly intensive focus on something. Not to say that mindfulness can't enter into that. It can infuse those kinds of experiences, but it's more the momentum of mindfulness as mindfulness gets established that it can enter into those very focused daily life kinds of experiences. So let's take a 10-minute break again. And when we come back, I'll start by talking a little bit about a different way of exploring or encouraging continuity in our daily life practice and take a couple questions and then see if anybody wants to describe their experience. So let's take a 10-minute break back in 20 before the hour.